I chose the following topic. The significance, let's try to understand the significance of 71. Medinat Yisrael turned 71 today. What is the meaning of 71 in halakha, in Jewish tradition? 71 is associated with a very important institution called the Sanhedrin, which had 71 scholars officiate essentially as the great Supreme Court of the Jewish people. How do we know that it had 70 people and 71 people? Because Moshe Rabbeinu gathers together Ve'esvali Shivim Ish Mizikne Yisrael, including Moshe, you have 71. So let's understand the meaning of the Sanhedrin, and I think it is deeply connected to Yom HaTzma'ut and the period of history that we live in today. And the Atchalta de Geula, the time period of today, and it also gives us some insight for how to move forward. So let's understand what the Sanhedrin was about. And in order to have a Sanhedrin, you first have to have a concept called smicha. Smicha is, today we think a rabbi has smicha, and that's an official, you get like, you go to a certain rabbinical school or yeshiva, you pass certain tests, and you get smicha. But the concept of smicha actually goes back to, where's the first place this appears?
Moshe.
Yehoshua and Moshe Rabbeinu, Parashat Pinchas, Moshe Rabbeinu vayismocha yadav al Yehoshua. Moshe actually gives over smicha to Yehoshua to continue the Torah Shebaal Peh, the tradition of Torah, passing down from generation to generation. Now you need, in order to be part of a Sanhedrin, you need real bona fide smicha. Now, smicha, the original form of smicha, was passed down from generation to generation, Moshe to Yehoshua, from generation all the way until this process ended around about 3rd century CE. It was devastating to lose smicha, partly because of persecution and exile. My son Boaz is very upset about this. You can hear him crying about this, that we've lost smicha today. So you need someone to have smicha in order to join the Sanhedrin. The other thing that you need smicha for is that in order to have proper Ibur HaShana, in order to intercalate the months according to the original way prescribed in the Torah, bringing witnesses, you also need somchim, you need rabbis who have real smicha as well. And there are also certain aspects of Dinei Mamonot, of monetary law, that can only be adjudicated with rabbis who have smicha, this whole area called Dinei Knasot, laws of fines. So you need smicha to create Sanhedrin and to have a fully operative legislative branch. Now, here's the thing with smicha. You can only receive smicha here in Eretz Yisrael. That's number one. Number two, you need someone to pass it on to you. And that tradition was lost around 200, 250 CE. And there were attempts in the Gemara and Masechet Sanhedrin, for example, Daf Yudalad, Rav Yehuda ben Baba. We see all the attempts to try to evade the Romans, to continue giving smicha from student to student, but eventually it is lost. So without the ability to give smicha to future generations, we can never really rebuild the Sanhedrin. And this is a major problem, because if we don't have a Sanhedrin, why do we need a Sanhedrin? What do you think? Why do we need a Sanhedrin? What would be the value of having a Sanhedrin today?
Kidneys, yeah.
Okay. You don't need a Sanhedrin to do with kidneys. What would you need a Sanhedrin for?
Rabbi, it would be change.
Change. What do you mean? Okay, so, Lawrence, do you want to add something? Yeah? Take over for the Knesset. Okay, it's an interesting idea.
Lawrence wants rabbis instead of
politics. So you want like Haredim running the entire country, right? Yeah, anyway, so, Nathan, yeah? One second. Yeah. Sanhedrin of 71. Correct. We're talking about a Sanhedrin of 71, the largest authoritative body. So the answer is that, first of all, the Sanhedrin is the Ikar Torah Sheba'al Peh, according to the Rambam. They're the ones who pass down the Mesorah from generation to generation. They would be able to make takanot and gzerot, and also undo certain ones under certain circumstances. So as Rashi said in a very sort of said in a, well, not quite a sacrilegious way, but you understand what I mean. You'd be able to add certain things, modify, and halacha would be able to evolve more naturally. And it's true, Rashi, you're correct on that point. But the key thing, according to the Rambam, is that the Sanhedrin would be able to resolve machlokot. Today you have different points of authority. You have this rabbi and that rabbi and this Beit Din and this yeshiva and this methodology. But imagine if you had all these rabbanim come together and they vote on certain issues. If there were a controversial issue, they'd vote on it. And there would be a sense of haskama, of consensus. And people would be able to respect the decision because it came from all the great scholars of Eretz Yisrael. And it would help to resolve issues and resolve machlokot. Yeah.
At the time when there was a Sanhedrin, were there any other alternative rabbinical schools that tried to...
Not that I know of.
There was still disputes between...
So that's a point the rabbi makes, that there were no ein machlokot b'Yisrael when there's a Sanhedrin, although it appears like machloket is an intrinsic factor, an essential factor of the halachic system, almost, right? So... But this is according to the Rambam's view, and he's going to be very important in this discussion. And now we get to a very fascinating chapter of Jewish history. We get to post the expulsion from Spain. The expulsion from Spain was in 1492, and many of the Jews who were expelled from Spain, they ended up fleeing to Portugal, to the Ottoman territory, Salonika, to Greece, to Eretz Yisrael, to Tzfat, to Mitzrayim, to Morocco. And there was a sense of messianic fervor in post the expulsion from Spain, because there was a feeling, if we've fallen so low, if God has punished us so badly, surely the Geula is soon to come. And we know that there's a deep connection between Galut and Geula in Judaism. And so a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, who was born in 1474, he was born near Toledo, Spain. He's 18 years old when the expulsion happens. He ends up fleeing to Morocco, apparently became chief rabbi of Morocco at the age of 18, ultimately travels to Egypt, Yerushalayim, finds his way to Tzfat. He wrote a number of halachic works. He decided that he was going in this period in Tzfat, and there are many important rabbinic personalities in Tzfat. Who else was in Tzfat at this time? The Arizal, good. Who else? Rav Shlomo Alkabetz wrote Lechadudi. Who else? Rav Yosef Karo, who authored the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yitzchak Alfasi was 400 years earlier in Morocco. The Alshich HaKadosh, and if anyone's ever heard of the Alshich, Rav Chaim Vital, some very important scholars are floating around in Tzfat at this time. Rav Yaakov Beirav comes to Tzfat, and he convinces the rabbis of Tzfat, and 25 rabbis end up signing this declaration, that they are going to reinstitute Smicha, and then ultimately create a Sanhedrin. Okay, and who was the first person who received smicha from this new school of thought? Anybody want to take a guess? It was actually Rav Yaakov Beirav himself. So he receives smicha, and we're going to see the method that he uses is the key here. Did he use the right method? Is there even a method to bring back, to resuscitate this concept? Afterwards, by the way, he decides to pass on smicha to some of his students. You know who he gives it to? Anybody know? Anybody know who's the second generation of Somchim from Rav Yaakov Beirav? Very important personality. Rav Yosef Karo receives smicha from Rav Yaakov Beirav, and he was a big supporter in this initiative to resuscitate this institution. Now, along comes personality number two who's important in this. And this is somebody by the name of the Maharal Bach. The Maharal Bach. He wasn't named this way when he came out of his mother's womb. It's Rav Levi ben Ibn Habib. Okay, Moreno Arav, Levi ben Ibn Habib. The Maharal Bach was also expelled from Spain. He was born in, he's a little bit younger. He was born in 1483 in Zamora, Spain. He's taken to Portugal with his father. His father was also a very important personality, Rav Yaakov Ibn Habib, who wrote the Ein Yaakov, which discussions on the Agedah in Shas. In Portugal, something tragic happened to the Maharal Bach. He was forcibly baptized. Okay? And ultimately, they escape to Salonika, gets to Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, he wants to be there to sort of undo and to do teshuvah for his baptism, which was forced upon him. And so he is becomes a leading rabbi in Yerushalayim. So we have a leading rabbi, one of the leading rabbis in Tzfat, Mahari Beirav, Rav Yaakov Beirav. Leading rabbi in Tzfat in Yerushalayim is the Maharal Bach. Now, what happens is that Rav Yaakov Beirav reinstitutes smicha, and they use a particular method, which we're going to talk about in just a second. And only after they do this, do they send letters to the rabbis in Yerushalayim to tell them, hey, by the way, this is what we decided to do. And it's always an interesting question. Is it better to ask for permission or to ask for forgiveness? And he decides to ask for...
Were they influential rabbis in Yerushalayim at that
time? Yes, Maharal Bach was an important rabbi. Other rabbis who were floating around the time, Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib, who I spoke about last week, Rav Yaakov Chagiz, who I spoke about, this Le'artzeinu, Komut Le'artzeinu, Be'artzeinu, they were also in Yerushalayim at this time. And... So he did this without discussing things with the rabbis in Yerushalayim, which we're going to see is relevant in just a second. Now, there's this writing back and forth. The rabbis in Yerushalayim are very upset about this. All these letters written back and forth, and we have all of them contained in the Nigeret that the Maharal Bach put together ultimately. What happens, though, is that Mahari Beirav gets kicked out of Tzfat by the Ottoman Turks, not because of this, for other reasons. And so the controversy sort of dies down. A few more generations of rabbis receive smicha in this process, but they end up agreeing we're not going to continue the process. So what was the crux of this debate? Why was Mahari Beirav supporting reinstituting smicha, and why was the Maharal Bach ardently opposed to it? And the answer is it's all based on a Rambam. A position that the Rambam takes, a very bold position of the Rambam, that's presented in two different places. In the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah, which he wrote when he was very young, apparently started when he was 17 or maybe 23, wrote this when he was young, a commentary on the Mishnah, and then it continues in his Mishneh Torah, his codification of Jewish law, which he wrote later on in his life. Now, what does the Rambam say in the Perush HaMishnah? Let's read this inside. He says as follows. Okay? Va'ani savur. I believe, the Rambam says, She'im tiyah haskama mikol ha-talmidim v'chachamim limnot ish b'yeshiva, klamar she'yasu rosh. If all the students and the rabbis agree to anoint one particular individual, uvitnai she'yehe zeberet Yisrael, and they're living in the land of Israel, harei oto ha'ish titkayem lo ha'yeshiva v'yesamuch v'yismochu achar kach et mi she'yirtzeh. The consensus of rabbis in Israel can give smicha to one great rabbi, and he will then give smicha to all the other students and all the rabbanim. And what's the Rambam's logic why this has to happen? It's a very interesting piece of logic. He says as follows. He says, the fisha im lo tomar kein lo tia efsharim yitzu beitin agadol olam. If we don't have a method to recreate smicha, then we will never have a beitin hagadol ever again. And this is impossible. Why would that be impossible? Because it says explicitly in the Nevi'im, "Va'ashiva shoftayach kivarishonav yotzayach kivatchila," that Hashem says, "I'm going to return your judges and justice and tzedek to Yerushalayim." And in this way, Lawrence, we're still waiting. The Knesset doesn't quite fulfill this vision and ideal that we sometimes hope it would at every moment in time. And therefore, we know, he says, that Mashiach's not going to like reinstitute the Sanhedrin. It's going to have to happen before Mashiach. Mashiach's not going to change the halakhic system. So therefore, we need a method for us to recreate the Sanhedrin. And this is the way to do it, to build consensus amongst rabbis in Israel. And this is what the Rambam says in Perush HaMishnah. Very clear cut, unequivocally, you can reinstitute Sanhedrin. And the Mahari Beirav, Yaakov Beirav, says, well, the Rambam says we could do this. There's no greater scholar than the Rambam. And therefore, on this basis, we are going to reinstitute smicha. We have rabbis returning to Tzfat. The Jews are returning to Eretz Yisrael. And so, this is on this basis he decided to go forward with this. Now, what did Maharal Bach respond? How did he understand this Rambam? What were the points of contentions between them? So the Maharal Bach responded, he says, you quoted from the Perush HaMishnayot, Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah. But the Rambam writes later about this as well in the Mishneh Torah, and there he seems to sow some doubt about his true position on this issue. Let's read what the Rambam says in Hilchot Sanhedrin. The Rambam discusses, first of all, in general, how do you give smicha? How many rabbis do you need to give smicha to a fourth rabbi? The Rambam says you need three rabbis. Only one of them needs to have smicha. The other two can be, you know, more standard, classic rabbis without smicha. But one guy has to have smicha, and they pass it on. V'nirin li advarim she'im yasiskimu kol hachachamim sheba Eretz Yisrael imnot the dayanim. If all the rabbis of Eretz Yisrael agreed to establish smicha again, hara'elu smuchim v'yeshlam adun dinei knasot, they could fully create a Sanhedrin and adjudicate certain areas of monetary law. But he ends off with three critical words. The hadavar tzarich hechreya. The hadavar tzarich hechreya. What does the hadavar tzarich hechreya mean? The hadavar tzarich hechreya. It needs either convincing or some resolution or it needs some majority. This is the Rambam. So Marabach looks at this and says, look, maybe the Rambam in his younger years was fully supportive of reinstituting the Sanhedrin and Smicha, but it's very clear the Rambam says, V'adavar tzarich hechreya. It's not clear even the Rambam stands behind this later in life. Seems like it needs further investigation, further study, and therefore we're not going to rely on this Rambam. Now, aside from this, the Maharal Bach says, wait a second, you didn't discuss anything with us rabbis in Yerushalayim. And the Rambam also says that you need Hiskimu kol hachachamim shebe Eretz Yisrael. All the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael need to agree to this. Well, excuse me, but with all due respect, we're the great rabbis of Yerushalayim. We have our own batei din, our own batei knesset, our own yeshivot. You did not confer with us. You didn't discuss this with us. How could you argue that you have fulfilled the criteria of the Rambam himself? So how did Ma'ariv Bei Rav respond? He said, listen, when the Rambam says you need all the chachamim, you need rov of the chachamim, and we had many great rabbis in Tzfat. So they go back and forth about the procedural issues relating to this. And there's some other points of contention. For example, now that you're going to have a Sanhedrin, what do you do about the calendar? Are we still going to rely on our fixed calendar, which we've had for 1,500 years? Or are we going to go back to looking for the moon and going to Beit Din with two witnesses and saying, today is the new month, and are we going to go back to that old system? So Ma'ariv Bei Rav said, well, we could put the brakes on this, because we would not go back to that system at this point. We wouldn't have to. We wouldn't have to do that. We could still continue following our calendar. But the Maharal Bach said, if you do this, you open up a Pandora's box. Because you would have to go back to the original calendrical system. You'd have to go back to having witnesses come to Beit Din. What's the problem with that? Isn't that a good thing? What's the problem with that? That would throw into disarray the entire Jewish calendar. Okay, and Jews are dispersed around the world. The one thing that keeps us unified more than anything else is the Jewish calendar. That we keep Pesach, for the most part, on the same day, depending on where you're. But like Chagim start on the same day, months start on the same day. That is something, and there have been major fights about this throughout Jewish history, because if you don't keep the same calendar, you're no longer going to remain one people. And so you see, one of the cruxes of this debate was, well, where do we want to take this? Do we want to open this Pandora's box? And the Maharal Bach says, we don't want to go there, and if we start down this road, we're going to have to having to address an issue which is beyond us and which would cause confusion in Israel. So these were the different. Now, why was Ma'ariv Bei Rav so? Why do you want to do this? What was compelling him to reintroduce smicha? So there are really two explanations. Number one, he felt that this would be able to give an opportunity for atonement for the Muranos who came, who had left Spain. The Muranos were Jews who had essentially acted like Christians, taken on a Christian identity. And they need atonement for the sins that they've committed, going to church and praying like a Christian and all these things. And he felt that with new rabbis who have smicha, they could institute malkut, lashes. I remember Singapore, there was like a few years ago when there was some kid who spit on the floor. And graffiti. Okay, so he felt if we could reinstitute a smicha, we could also have malkut, and Murano Jews can receive atonement. That's a questionable discussion about whether that, you know, and Marabach debates that point. But the other reason that compelled Ma'ariv Bei Rav to do this is because he really wanted to. He felt that the geula was close, and we had to move it forward. We had to do things to bring about the geula. And I'll quote his words, you know, because he was shocked that the Maharal Bach and other rabbis were against this. Who would even think of something that would delay your redemption? That all who hear of it would not come with drums and dancing to subscribe to it. So he was shocked that the rabbis of Yerushalayim did not support him in this initiative. So now, what did the Rambam really mean when he said v'hadavar tzarich achreya? The Ma'ariv Rav says, oh, that's about another debate whether you need three rabbis or one rabbi sitting on the Beit Din to give smicha to the next somech. But the Rambam is not questioning the fundamental institution itself. It's just this detail about three versus one. So this is this famous piece in the Rambam. Now, what are the consequences for us today? Now, it's interesting. There have been other attempts to reinstitute smicha. Anybody know who's involved with this?
Napoleon.
Okay, but no, but that was in order to force the Jews to assimilate into French society. That wasn't a real Sanhedrin, and that was not an Eretz Yisrael. That's what Napoleon didn't know. It wasn't in Israel. But what were other attempts? Anybody know? Rav Maimon, I think 1940s, he tried. Anybody else? Rav Yisrael Shklov, a student of the Grun, in the 1830s, attempted this. The Rav Adin Steinsaltz in 2004, and with other Rabbanim, also attempted recently to reinstitute Smicha in Sanhedrin. All of these attempts have failed. But what are the lessons? What is the meaning of us for this for today? And I think, first of all, there are a few points that I want to emphasize. Number one, the centrality of Eretz Yisrael in halakha, in Jewish thought, in Judaism. Smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. A Sanhedrin can only be created in Eretz Yisrael. This is the center not only of where Jews are supposed to live, it's also the center of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's Ki Mitzion Teitei Torah U'Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. And for the Rambam, as long as the rabbis in Israel agree to something, which, if you think about it, how could that like ever happen, that rabbis agree on something as big as this? But that's number one. And how blessed we are, how privileged we are to be living in Medinat Yisrael, to have such a large percentage of world Jewry living here, to be able to see institutions being rebuilt, tzava, etc., schooling, yeshivot. It's really an amazing, amazing miracle that we get to live through. And indeed, Ki Mitzion Teitei Torah, today is the center of Torah learning. And maybe perhaps also a future Sanhedrin will emerge. Point number two is that this whole debate raises a fundamental question. How far do we want to open? Do we want to open the Pandora's box? Should we be saying, hey, we have Israel today, let's go build Beit HaMikdash. Let's go bring a Korban Pesach. How much do we want to push things that have been not just out of vogue, but non-existent for 2,000 years? Because there's a danger to this. On the one hand, we want to bring about the redemption. We want to, you know, do what we're, fulfill certain mitzvot, building a Beit HaMikdash, bringing a Korban Pesach, these are mitzvot. On the other hand, there are political and halachic dangers involved with some of these things. And it raises some very interesting questions about, you know, how much do we push things further? How much do we say, like, let's just wait on this. Let's wait on this and be patient and not push the boundaries too much. But the third point is that I think it's important to understand that the Jewish people have been in exile for 2,000 years. And to some degree, the halachic system has also been in exile for 2,000 years, because instead of having a method to resolve machlokot, a central authority to resolve things, you have different opinions and different minagim and different, which is beautiful, and it's part of the tapestry and sort of the symphony of halachic life, but it also means that on some very key issues, we can't find consensus. I'll just throw out an issue, agunot, for example. You would hope great rabbanim could come together and agree on a way to move forward. And it would take great Rabbanim to do this. And so the dream of rebuilding a Sanhedrin, reinstituting a Sanhedrin, could really have promising ramifications. And it would be part of a Gula process, because it would mean that we'd be able to address some of the great national issues